other things, it's like, if you do a mitzvah, you create an angel, it's a mitzvah. But Torah is a mitzvah. Just every word. So right now I've created like 12 angels according to the Vilna Gaon. So we're gonna learn Torah. So let's do today, with your permission, Hilchos Meiser, because that is super duper relevant to everyone, always, but especially now that you're going to go out into the real world and have your own bank account and eventually soon start working and have to ask yourself all these questions of how much money do I give, what percentage, how does that all work, so this is something that was less relevant in, you know, high school when you're being supported by your parents. But now that we're starting life, you got to know Hilchos Meiser. Sounds good?
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so as always, I'm heavily relying upon my posek, who is Rav Melamed. If there's stuff that's a machlokas, I'll try my best to tell you that there's other rabbis that might feel differently. But 95% everyone agrees. And he almost always quotes his sources. He doesn't make stuff up. Mm-hmm. And the great, again, you can look this up on your own. It's in Hebrew, it's in English, it's on the internet. There's an app. So, the Pnini Halacha. There's a Pnini Halacha app. It's in Hebrew, it's in English, online.
And it's free?
And it's free.
You go, just look at like the book.
And just go online and write Pnini Halacha. You can do a Google search right now, Hebrew, English. You have an English one. Everything that I'm saying, you could read on your own. See that I'm not making stuff up. It's amazing. It's amazing what they do. Sometimes I listen while I'm biking or scootering. I'll listen to it because they actually speak it out in Hebrew. They don't have an English one yet. So it's an amazing sefer. It's also, I don't know if I mentioned this, this is one of the reasons why I made Aliyah. Probably one of the main reasons is because he has a sefer called Ha'am Be'aretz, which is all about Israel, the myth of living in Eretz Yisrael. I read that in my Shana Aleph, and he kind of convinced me that halachically it's really important to live in Eretz Yisrael. And I learned a lot of my Hebrew. My Shana Aleph, I would go through these books in my free time. Very easy Hebrew, and they have Hebrew English. So, anyways, so I'm a big fan. And he's alive, so you can ask some Shilohs, send him a WhatsApp. Total. So, before we jump into Hilchos Meiser, the truth is we have to learn Hilchos Tzedakah, which are not the same things. Okay? To be exactly, really. Why not? Because there's a mitzvah d'oraita to give tzedakah. That is a biblical command. A poor man walks to you on the street today, it happened to me today, and you take out a half a shekel, and you give him half a shekel, and it's a woman, you give her a big hug, you get a mitzvah. Two mitzvahs. Tzedakah and be'afarech kamocha. That's on one level. What is the source for that? Doesn't matter, we'll do without the marker. Hatoach titach. Okay, it's in Devarim. When you have a poor person amongst the Jewish people, you should give him tzedakah. Okay? Should open up your heart. Shouldn't just give. You should give with love. You should really, really give with, like, it's a privilege to give tzedakah. It's not just about giving him money. It's about showing him love. And that's first of all, not about how much you give. It's more about how you give. I think I've mentioned in the past, Sefer HaChinuch says, if you don't give tzedakah with simcha, you don't fulfill the mitzvah, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, and possibly the Rambam, and other poskim. So we want to give tzedakah, and we want to give with joy. That's first off. I'll read it inside. When you're going to have a poor person in one of your gates, in your land, don't harden your heart and don't be hard-hearted. Open up your heart. Give him what he needs. It sounds like a Hasidic drasha, right? Open up your hearts, man. But it's the Torah. It's a pasuk in the Torah. So it's in Devarim Tet Vav Zayin and Chet. Devarim 15, 7 and 8. There are other times, it says also in Devarim Tetzvah earlier, a few times in the Torah it says, there's a mitzvah to give tzedakah with an open heart, with love, with joy. Now, not only is this a mitzvah, we haven't at all spoken about how much you have to give. All I'm saying is that you should give. Not only is it a mitzvah, it's a big mitzvah. The Gemara in Bava Batra says, Shkula tzedakah k'neged kol mitzvah. It's equal to all of the mitzvahs. When I give that little half shekel, it's like I did all the mitzvahs. Now, how do we explain that? Perhaps you could say, on a little bit of a Kabbalistic level, why did Hashem create the world? I'm sure we've learned in our Hashkafa classes, because Hashem loves to give. So when I give, I'm actually partnering with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and allowing Hashem to give to that poor person. And so I'm fulfilling the whole purpose of creation, and that's a big deal. The Gemara also says, you could have a death decree on your head, and giving tzedakah saves your life. That's why tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah, mavirim et ruach zera. Not only that, but the Torah tells Avraham Avinu, you have a mission. That's a tzedakah umishva, to do kindness and justice in the world. So one could argue that when I'm giving tzedakah, I'm fulfilling the whole mission of the Jewish people to be a kind and loving person and to create a society here in Israel, which is all about kindness and love towards each other. Okay, these are no big chiddush. Nothing I said, I'm sure, is too surprising. Just kind of to reiterate before we jump into the details. Now, besides, you know, I just already note now, what about non-Jews? Because the pasuk specifically says, give to Jews. And if we have time, I would be happy to jump through the priorities of who to give first and who to give second and who to give third. If we have time today, try to jump into that. But, so there's also a mitzvah to give to non-Jews. But it's not a biblical mitzvah. It was a rabbinical mitzvah. And therefore, I'd be thoughtful about, you know, how much you give and what causes you give to, because not everyone's funds are unlimited. And there is a concept, of course, that, you know, your brother comes before your cousin. So we do have an obligation to help our brethren, Jews, before we have to give to our cousins, the children of God, the non-Jews. But at the same time, we need our chesh shalom for the sake of peace. And also because sometimes it's a pekuach nefesh situation, perhaps, and you know, if we don't give to non-Jews, they're also not going to give to us. And certainly, you know, it's a good thing to do to give tzedakah to non-Jewish causes, especially in, like, I don't know, Hurricane Sandy or 9/11 fund, or all these kind of emergency situations. I think it is important that the world sees that Jews don't only care about themselves, but care about others. And that's why it's amazing that Israel goes out of its way to help other nations, to be a light into the nations and help others. So yes, it's a good thing to do to give others, but, and it makes a Kiddush Hashem. But you have to prioritize giving to a Jew who needs your help more. Fine. All that is tzedakah. As a separate thing besides tzedakah, there's something called meiser. Meiser tells me how much tzedakah to give. Did I give all my money away? 80%? Did I give 2%? So that's a separate thing called meiser, which is not based on the Torah. It's true that if you look in the Torah, we have a concept called Meiser. Yaakov Avinu gives Meiser, and we have Meiser Behema, and Meiser Trumos, and all of these things. But none of them are talking about money. They're all talking about animals and things for the Beis HaMikdash. Very important halachas, but nothing to do with tzedakah. Okay, Meiser Ksafim is from the Gemara. Okay? Now, what Meiser, as the name implies, means 10%. But that, the Gemara says in Bava Batra, I believe, that 10% is the minimum. The maximum is 20%. Okay? So 10% is to fulfill your obligation, kind of check, I'm going to go to heaven. 20% is ideal, the best way to fulfill the mitzvah. You have a little bit more money, or just have a bigger heart, so you'll try to give 20%, or somewhere between that. The more you give, the better the mitzvah, the bigger the schus you have in Shemayim. So anywhere between 10% and 20% is how much we're supposed to get. Clear? Okay. Now you're going to ask me, wait a second, that's a lot of money. 20%. What if I can't afford that? Right? What if I got to, you know, put my kids through college, and I got to pay the rent, and realistically, I just don't make that much money. I just don't have enough money pay my bills. And now you're going to tell me I have to give 20% away? So we have good news for you. Good news is, Meiser is only applicable if you can pay your bills. What do I mean? If you're in debt, you're in the zero, then you are considered a poor person, sadly enough. And a poor person is not obligated to give mice. Okay? So if, for whatever reason, I don't know, you can't pay your bills, I think it's unfortunately a common occurrence if you live in Chutzlaritz and you got to pay $20,000 to put your kids through school.
Yeah.
So, amazingly enough, people actually are in the negative. And then they're exempt. You don't have to worry about it. Okay? This is malasot. It's better than to make more money one day, and or your kids will get done with school and you'll be in the positive again, and then you'll be able to give meiser. But meiser only applies if you can pay your bills. Yes. Go for it.
What are we taking percentage of when it comes to monster?
Good question.
And also, let's say you go to graduate school and you're paying back those loans.
Ooh.
If you're like in debt when it comes to student loans, like I feel like it's pretty normal for that to happen after people go to graduate school. So how does MISR play into that?
Excellent question. Well, first, let's start with the first question. What percentage? So what we're talking about here is what you make at the end of the day in your business. So for example, let's say, you know, Allie runs a supermarket. And she makes $1,000 a month. Hopefully more, but I'm just saying. And that's how much money comes into the cashier. But that's not your net profit. Because you have to pay money for the cashier and for the electricity and for the bag of corn.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about how much money goes into your bank account at the end of the day, considering the expenses. Okay?
I'm not talking about like taxes or all that stuff?
After taxes. No. I mean, again, just for the business itself. So if just for the $10,000, I make $10,000 a month. But like in Israel, the way it works, in America, it's a little bit more common. In Israel, they'll take off money from $10,000 that I make, but you only really walk away with $8,500. Like, the seminary pays me this amount, but then immediately taxes.
Yeah, I think that happens in America also. It just gets taken out of your paycheck, but...
Right.
Then, so...
So that's what you actually make, not what theoretically you're supposed to make, but
so
after taxes.
After taxes, but after, before you pay your monthly expenses, like... You're using that money. You take MISR and then you pay.
So we can't be that lenient because MISR, you have to have a home anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're working or not working, it's not connected to how much money you make. So the fact that you have a home, you got to deal with your rent. That's your problem. That's not MISR related.
Mm-hmm.
Or the fact that you have to eat. You have to eat whether you're going to go to work or not. It has to be an expense related to you going to work. So if it's, let's say... Maybe. You can make that argument for sure. Because you could have taken care of the kid yourself. You have to be realistic with yourself. Or it's a car. I mean, let's say you wouldn't need a car or the how much the bus costs. The bus. So that you can take out of how much money you have to pay. Because that you wouldn't have needed to go to work if not for the car expenses. So it's a bit tricky, but you make an estimate of how much you actually are making from going to work. Okay? And again, if you're poor. At the end of the day, you're not, you know, you don't have money set aside in the bank, and you're not even paying enough for your rent. So like I said, you're exempt from MISR. Never. You still have to get tzedakah, but you don't have to give 10%. You give whatever you can give. Okay? Even a poor person has to give tzedakah. But this law of MISR only applies to people who can pay their bills. But with that said, again, you know, yeah, person should be honest with himself. If he's not poor and he is paying his bills and he's going to a vacation here and there and he's, you know, going out for dinner here and there, so then he's not so poor. And obviously he's not starving. So he really should prioritize giving 10% of his money to MISR. Okay, so that's in terms of, we're talking after. Okay, in terms of paying back student loans. So I'm not going to tell you I know the answer 100%. But I think many, many people are doing that. They're living on a mortgage, or they're living on a loan. I don't think the halacha would exempt everyone who happens to have payments to pay from Meiser. So as long as a person is kind of just living and he's still like, you know, living a normal life, not super duper frugally, as if he's, I think he would still be obligated to give Meiser in that situation. Okay? Good. Now, what is the source for Meiser? So this is a three-way machlokes. Here are our options. According to the Bach, who's a huge posek of the old circus, this is only a minhag. Meiser is a minhag. Now, only maybe isn't the right word. It's a minhag. A lot of Judaism is minhag. It's an important minhag. It's a strong minhag. But it's a minhag. Okay? Therefore, you can understand why maybe there will be leniencies at certain times. According to the Taz, who is one of the primary commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, what you learn when you do Smicha, the Turei Zaha, and I'd say the consensus, most of poskim say like this, it's a rabbinical law. It's a rabbinical decree. Okay? The rabbis say we should give Meiser. And according to Tosfos, and he's a little bit of a Dasi Yachid on this, which is, he's an individual opinion, he actually thinks it is a biblical law. How do we generally paskin? Most poskim go like the Taz and assume Meiser is derabbanan. Meiser is a rabbinical law. L'mayin afkamina, there's not such a big difference, right? We're rabbinical Jews. We keep minog, you know, we keep everything. But because it's rabbinical, that's why, as we're seeing, there's certain leniency. Like if a person can't pay his dues. So that's just summarizing a really complicated sugya. Alright, so that's 10 to 20%. Now, another question that comes up very often is, what if I, Ezrat Hashem, one day you're going to be very, very rich. You're going to be a millionaire, Ezrat Hashem, and you're going to be a member of Kalman and his little yeshiva, and you're going to give a big donation, but you're going to say, I'm only going to give, I have $10 million. I'm going to give $2 million. I have so much money. What do I need all this money for? I want to give more. You cannot give more. Right? It's a really important question. Because you have these multi-billionaires. And they want to do a lot of good for the world. So why should they be limited to only giving 20%? Yeah. So that's a question. And the answer is, like almost all tough halachic shaylas, machlokas.
Some people say you can't give more tzedakah.
Some people say you cannot. Correct. You cannot give more than 20%. So what do you do?
But then you could just do chesed with the money, can't you?
Can you get around it by doing chesed?
Like, let's say hosting huge Shabbos meals and invite
people for. So I'm going to benefit from it since I'm going to take a piece of the, you know, the kugel, so it's not fully deductive. Well. That would be an interesting loophole. Maybe, as we're going to see, there are other opinions. Okay, so they probably won't have to be that desperate. But it's a good. That's a good shot. But there's an opinion that 20% is the max. God gives you the money, you got to keep it, keep it to the end of your life, give it to your children, let them give tzedakah, that's it, 20% maximum. However, there are a lot of other rabbis, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Bechule, who say no. When the Gemara said 20% is the maximum, what's the reasoning? We're talking about a normal rich person. And the Gemara wanted to make sure that there are rich people in the world and that they don't, you know, give away all their money to tzedakah. You have to have gvulot. But we're talking about nowadays rich people. We're talking about people who have hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes. They're really, really rich. Whether they give $20 million or $30 million or $40 million away, it really won't make a difference. They're still filthy rich. They're still fine, you know? So if they want to give extra money, good for them. So that's how other rabbis postulate that. You know, you can give more than 20%. Okay, so you have a heter. You want to give extra money to the Kalman Kailo one day? Go for it. I give you a heter. Okay? Now, by the way, how do you, it's kind of, the other side is a little bit more, why would you even say that you can't give them away 20%? I heard the theory that it's important that there be really rich Jews in the world. But sometimes when you're really rich, it's more than just the money itself. But you can save that money for the right time and save people's lives. People like, also status, right? Exactly. You have a certain ability to be mashpia just by having that money. For example, Montefiore, the guy who founded Yamin Moshe, he actually, I think I mentioned this, that he saved people's lives. He went out and pressured, he had a lot of political clout, and he pressured governments to save Jewish lives. So you can make that argument. But if someone asked me, I'd say, yes, you can give more money because they're still pretty rich and Hashem will pay back. So it's all good. Yeah.
What if you're supported by your parents? Do you still give Maser of your paycheck?
Good question. So, okay. Let's put it like this. When you're in, I'll put it like this. Even if you're in high school, like when I was in high school, talkless, my parents were supporting me, right? My parents paid the rent.
Yeah.
But they would give me money and say, Kizi, this is your money. It's $100. You want to buy pizza? You want to buy shawarma? You want to give to Kadaka? It's yours. It's an allowance. Once it's my money, the fact that they're supporting is irrelevant. It's not part of the picture. It's my money right now. I'm not poor. I'm supported. So I can give it to whatever I want. Not only can I should give it. I should give 10% to Kadaka. Now, if my parents go to me specifically and say, no, I'm giving you money for pizza. I don't want you giving tzedakah. We give enough tzedakah, right? Or let's say they want to help you pay your rent. Right now it's very popular. Parents will help out. So if they tell you, I'm not giving you money for you to give this to the next poor person. I want you to use to support your family. Then you have no right to give it away. You do what they tell you to do. So it depends on what they want. Kind of ask them and just say, is this my money to do what I want, or do you have a specific, like, this for this money, clothing, and whatever? Even if your parents are helping support you, still, if you're well off now because they're supporting you and you're working, you work at the local Cofix in America, Walmart, and you're getting your $200 and you're good, you're supported. So, I do think you should give $20 to $40. To Dukka, you know, as long as you're not poor, and as long as your parents are okay with that, make sense? I have to say, be honest, I don't know if all, not 100% sure if all folks can agree with the mom about that, but that's what he says. Maybe he's a little mafmir, I'm not sure. I see a lot of people don't do that.
Like if you're, like
if they're a student, they don't get
to be, a student, and my parents are.
I'm aware that what I'm saying sounds very machmir, and I'm also aware that it could be that they're more lenient opinion. So I'm just being very honest with you. But that's what Ramlaman says. That's his understanding of the sugya. So I always think it's good to be machmir about giving, and Minadam Lachabero, he thinks, yes, you still should give Meiser even if you're a student being partially supported by your parents, as long as they're okay with that. You can ask other rabbis, maybe they're more lenient.
I have another question. When it comes to Maser, is that specifically to poor people or can it be to institutions?
Good question. So, who should you give to? So, first of all, Maser is meant, the 10% itself, the minimum 10%, is meant to give to poor people, poor Jews. Okay? What does it mean? That, even that sentence needs to be broken down. Who's a poor Jew? A poor Jew is someone that can't pay their basic needs. They can't pay their rent. They can't pay, their basic things that everybody needs to pay. It could be in America, it's yeshiva. I don't know. If they're spending money on extra things that aren't necessary, then that's a problem. Okay? If they have a $10,000, whatever, a beautiful apartment that they don't really need, then that's an issue. They really shouldn't be doing that, and it's hard to call them a poor person. But if they're living the basic, minimal type of way necessary, and their needs are not met, they don't have to be a beggar on the street to be considered a poor person. They just have to be someone whose basic needs, they can't pay it for whatever reason. Okay? What were you going
to
say?
So giving to like a yeshiva, that count as
one? So, okay, so that's the basic 10%, mm-hmm. right? And most, you know, gabbis and most yeshivas have like a, or most synagogues have like a poor fund. Yeah. And nowadays there's a million organizations. So that's to help the poor. Besides for that, there's other ways of giving tzedakah. Baruch Hashem is endless, right? Yeshivas, seminaries, hatzalah, you know, a million other things. All of this is very good. It's a big, big mitzvah to support them, and you get a big chayla from the Olam Haba. But on the simple reading of the sugya, that should be not from the base of the first 10%. That should come from the 10 to 20%. Okay? And if you're really rich, from the 10 to 30%. If you can afford it, great. But ideally, the way, again, Rav Melamed reads it, is 10% to actual poor people, and then another 10% to everything else. Now, from that everything else, yeshivas and seminaries are very high on the list. Because supporting Torah in our generation is extremely important. That's what's giving not just physical life, but spiritual life to us. And which yeshiva and which seminary? A lot of people get confused about this. It makes a lot more sense to give to yeshiva and seminary that you have a connection with, that you agree with their hashkafa, than to give to this random guy who just knocks on your door.
Yeah.
Right? So, it's, and especially if, you know, if Midrash Moriah gave you such, so much, you should give to them before you give to, I don't know, a random yeshiva that you have no connection with. Yeah. Now, again, it could be that there are certain post-skim who say, nowadays it's more important to give to yeshivas and seminaries, and that could be part of your 10%, even more than giving to poor people. I don't know. Maybe. There also might be some yeshivas and seminaries for all that, some kola and things like that, that even support poor people. So that, you know, if they're supporting, so then you could take both. But that's what I, personally, I take 10%. I cheshbon out how much money I need each month. I do it every month. Keeps it orderly. And I give whatever, if I made 10,000 shekel, I'll buy. So then 1,000 shekel goes to the poor family. Could be a lot of poor families. I happen to have one particular poor family that I'm very connected with, that I know, or tzaddikim, that try to pay the bills, and they just can't hack it out. So I give straight up to them. That's my 10%. And after that, I have all my other mitzvahs. I have a little kollel, I have this thing, I have my Shabbos meal, I have all these other mitzvahs. And that's my 10 to 20. So that's the way that I work it out. And that's what Rav Melamed suggests. Okay? Good. Now, okay. What else? First of all, it's important to know that the Gemara specifically says that when you give Meiser, Hashem's going to pay you back. For that Meiser. There's a million great stories. That's time to tell you a good one. About when you give, you will get it back. So you don't have to be worried about it. And in fact, this is such a unique halacha. It's one of the only halachas where the Gemara says you can test God. You can 100% bank that when you give your money, God will give it back. So you have nothing to be sad about. And truthfully, I look forward every month for giving that tzedakah. I know Hashem's going to pay it back. And, you know, the only thing is, if you test God, then He might test you. He might not want to test God. But you can rely 100%. The Gemara says, Asher b'shvil shukit asher. That's the drasha. Give Meiser so that you should get rich. Okay? Mm-hmm. And in addition, ideally, the way we should look at it is not really that I made 10,000 shekel this month. I made 9,000 shekels. 1,000 shekel I'm giving is God gives it to me so that I get to be the gabbai to decide who I want to give tzedakah to. But it's not my money. It's like it's His money. It's written aside. So I'm just the middleman to give that money where it needs to go. And if I don't, then it's a problem. And again, if we take that attitude, it's going to be a lot easier to be happy, to be, you know, excited. To be able to give that tzedakah to the poor person, and the poor person should feel that not that he's a nevach, but that I'm happy that I have this chus to give to you, and you get to receive, and you give me the opportunity to do this mitzvah. That's the ideal give and take of tzedakah. Now, another important halacha comes up all the time. Let's say someone knocks on your door. Okay? Should I give him tzedakah? The answer is yes. Gemara in Bava Batra explicitly says, if someone bothers to go to your door front and embarrasses himself, it's very not nice to you know, kind of walk, to ask for money, you're supposed to give them money. However, we don't know who this guy is. You know, I've never met this guy before. I don't know if his institution is the one I wanted to give to. And I have my 10% that poor person that I know. So the Gemara says, don't give so much that you're going to be poor, that you won't have enough to give to your other tzedakahs. So give a reasonable amount that he won't be embarrassed. But on the other hand, give an amount that don't give all your money away to random tzedakahs that maybe whatever, for bad habits. Give something. It could be 5 shekel, it could be $1, $2, whatever it is. Give something. Some people give $20, like even better. Certain places, it's embarrassing, you know. In Brooklyn, it could be if you give it someone a buck and it comes to your house, it might be a little insulted. So give five, but whatever it is. Whatever, give something. A good story about that from Small Miracles. True story. So there's a person, unfortunately, who lost his wife, and a beggar comes to the door. And he was like taking care of his kids, and he's kind of in mourning for his wife, and he was not in a good happy place, and this beggar comes and asks him for that. And he's about to just be like, sorry, it's a bad time. Like, I don't have the energy for this right now. And then he said, you know what? I'll do the guy in this stuff. Whatever. He says, okay, hold on. You know, my wife always tried to be nice. She used to deal with the beggars. I'll go and, you know, and he says, I'll give him up. And then he says, you know what? I'll give the guy a sandwich. He looks hungry. He opens up his fridge, and who does he see there? His kid. His little kid somehow got himself locked in the fridge, was not able to get himself out. He unlocks the door, they immediately call the hospital, and his life is saved. And the hospital says that if he would have stayed in there for longer, chas v'shalom, who knows what would have happened. It's a true story. Yeah, it's a crazy story. But it brings the point home, that when you give tzedakah to somebody else, you might think, oh, I'm doing it for me. But you're saving your own soul. You're saving your own kid. Right? So you see it palpably in that story, but really it's always true. It could be, who knows, that guy stopping on the street asking for half a shekel, that's who knows what kind of yisurim you would have had to deal with. And instead, you get to do a mitzvah. And I always, again, I don't necessarily give always. There are certain places when I feel like the beggar is—it's not. I don't want to encourage that. So, for example, at the Kotel, has a rule, a law: they're not allowed to ask for tzedakah at the wall itself. Why is that? It's not because they're anti-tzedakah, but because I saw with my own eyes the Kotel became just a place where 100 people swarm after you, especially if you're an American, and you feel like you can't daven because the whole time you're dealing with these beggars who see money. So the Kotel, I think it's good that it should not be a place of tzedakah. There's places outside the Kotel. There's the steps down to the Kotel. There you can get tzedakah. So I try to explain that nicely to beggars when they break the rules. I do it with love. I try to say, listen, I don't have anything against you. I'll give you half a shekel over there, but here at the Kotel, it's a place of davening. So, and I also think maybe there are other places where it's also maybe inappropriate. They go into a restaurant sometimes, and like the restaurant doesn't want them there, and stuff like that. But in general, if I can, I will try to give something. It doesn't have to be a lot. It literally could be a half a shekel. Sometimes I have little chocolates, like chocolate coins. I give them like a little chocolate, and just to say, like, you bring a smile to them and like make them laugh. The key is to show that you care about them, that they're a human. But then, I'm not going to give all my money to these random people because, I don't know, they're using it for, you know, sometimes they're using it for cigarettes and silly things like that. So, it's a bad balance. I want to be a giver. It's all about opening up my heart, but I also need to save my money so I can give to causes that I know are actually good causes. Okay? So that's another really important, super relevant point. Okay, what else did I... Am I not mentioned? Okay, this comes up a lot. A little strict, sorry. Hope you don't regret coming to class today. Wedding presents. Bezrat Hashem. Soon, have a wedding. And you're going to have, Baruch Hashem, people are going to want to give gifts to you. Do I have to give gifts, meiser on my gifts? Okay? The answer is, I'll focus, argument. But Rav Melamed, who in many things, especially the Shabbos, we've learned, is quite lenient. On this, he's strict. On this, he says, he believes, yes, you should even give meiser on your wedding gifts. What's the rationale? At the end of the day, it's like a profit. It goes into your bank account, and that's your money. And therefore, if I make $20,000 on my gifts, I should give minimally $2,000 away to tzedakah. Now, if it's a gift and not actual money, then even Rav Melamed would agree. You don't have to cheshbon out how much did that refrigerator cost. That if they're giving you a gift, they're giving you a gift, and you don't have to calculate. But he feels that if it's money, you really should give 10%. Maybe some could argue that they're giving you the money for the sake of the money. They want to give it to you. They don't want you giving 10% to something else. But Rav Melamed sees it. I mean, it's like your work pays you. It's for you, but it's your money now, so you should give some of it away. So he's mocking about that. Also, let's say a lot of times the government will give you tax rebates. Right, so let's say, every year, nowadays, Biden wants you to vote for him, so he's going to give you $1,000 at the end of the year. Or in Israel, the way it works is that every kid you have, you get more money. So so then that too, you should give meiser on that money. It's not only on money you work for, but any, or let's say you win the lotto. Right, so if you win the lotto, you should give 10% to 20% of that money to tzedakah.
In Florida, they just passed a law that if you send your kids to a religious private school, they give a certain amount of money back for each kid. Mm-hmm. Would you give maser on that, or not really, because it's just kind of you getting your money back for something you're paying for?
Good question. I don't know the answer. You should probably ask rabbis who live in Florida, because I'm sure they're dealing with it.
Yeah.
I guess is the second one more. Because it's like, it's not like they're just giving money free and do whatever you want. It's like, you already have to pay a certain amount of money, so it's kind of giving you a rebate.
Yeah.
But I don't understand. I know that Florida, apparently everyone's moving there because it's taxes are great there.
Yeah, but this is also going to get more juicy.
Yes, exactly. And that's another reason why somebody just moved there, I heard. But I don't know. Good kasha. A lot of kashas I don't know for sure. Tzedakah for kids. So again, there are some rabbis who are lenient and say that you can consider tzedakah that you like the money that you give for education as also meiser, but like for a Torah education because you're giving towards your kids. But Rav Melamed doesn't buy it so much because he says, look, you're obligated to educate your kids. They're your kids, So he would say, like, if you can't. If after paying for Ramaz, you can't, you're poor, so then you're again for miser. So you can give whatever you can, give 5%, give 3%, give whatever you can. But others are lenient about that. It used to be also you could give money for Sfarim. You could buy Sfarim. Even today, some rely on that leniency. I think nowadays, there's so many Sfarim available. They're just on the internet for free and library. I don't know. So. You could use that leniency, but I would use it, let's say, on the 10 to 20% and not the 0 to 10%. As I said, from the 10 to 20, you have a lot more freedom to basically do whatever you want. But for the 0 to 10%, I think it's better to give actual poor people. Or if you want to rely upon leniency, or poor institutions, if you want to rely on that cheetah. Parents also, it's an argument if paying for your parents counts, like old age home, stuff like that. Hopefully you won't have to worry about that for a while. So, when we get to that stage of life, we can figure that out. Let's see what else I haven't mentioned. Oh, the order. priority in giving. So the pasuk says, again, we'll read through it quickly. When you have a poor person, from one of your brothers, okay, from that alone we see that a Jew takes precedence to a Gentile. One of your gates. So what are the gates referred to? That referred to your cities, poor people takes precedence to other people's tzedakah. So whatever community you align yourself with, that's who you, you know, should worry about first. So where are you going to be next year, for example?
I'm going to Stern.
Right, so it could be in the Stern community if you want to give poor people in Stern or wherever you live. So that takes precedence for other places. And then the process keeps going. And then after that, once you've already given Stern or your community, so then Eretz Yisrael. You should get first two places in Eretz Yisrael. And as I mentioned, you should always give with an open heart of joy. Okay, great. I want to tell one last story, and we'll call it a day. So, one last important point. You know, a lot of times you don't know who to give to. So the best thing to do is to give it to a gabbai. Usually in a synagogue, they'll have a gabbai who understands the community's needs best. He knows, you know, families will come to him in private, and they'll explain to him the financial situation. And hopefully, if he's smart, he can give the tzedakah in a way so that the family, but at the same time, help them find jobs and encourage them. Hopefully, he'll do it in a way that they won't be dependent on the tzedakah. And instead of working, be dependent on your tzedakah. So always better to give a gabbai or someone who understands that where the best place to give instead of just giving your miser to a random guy in the street or even a beggar at the kotel because you don't know if that's the best way to use the money. Okay, so I always love this sharing this story. Nathan Strauss, I just actually came from Strauss Street. My tour was at Strauss Street. So Nathan and Isidore Strauss are really rich philanthropists in New York in the about 1900. They own Macy's and a bunch of stores. Very kind people. Actually, Nathan Strauss saved a lot of lives because he pushed pasteurizing milk, so which wasn't prevalent, and saved a lot of lives. So he was a secular Jewish guy doing great things for America. And he goes to his brother Isidore, right? And he says, let's visit Israel, visit Palestine. Why not? Never been there, you're Jewish. And it happened to be, they had a lot of good tzedakah causes. So they go around, they visit, they see all the tzedakahs, all good. Isidore's grass is, okay, I want to go to Europe, I want to go tour a little bit. And let's go back to America. And Nathan Strauss says, I can't do it. I see this country, they need my creativity, they need my tzedakah. There's a lot more I wanna brainstorm. I wanna do more. So Isidore says, fine, I'm taking my wife. I'm going to Europe. We'll meet up soon. And Nathan Strauss continues to travel around the country, keep seeing the country. Isidore Strauss sends a telegram. He says, Nathan, we have a boat booked for you. It's a beautiful boat. Come this and this day, we need to go home. We need to get back to business. Nathan Strauss thinks about it. He hesitates. There's so much more to do. He had all these ideas, projects. He goes to Europe, but he missed the boat. He came a day late for the boat. He's bummed out. What was the boat that he missed? The Titanic. He missed the Titanic. Actually, Isidore Strauss was a little bit of a hero. He could have went, but he didn't want to go take a woman's place because women came first. So he died on the boat. Not Nathan. Isidore. Yeah. And Nathan Strauss is haunted by this. He goes back to Israel, and he continues his whole life until 1931, giving tzedakah, investing, and dedicating his life to Israel. That's why Netanya is named after him.
Really?
Yeah. That's why Strauss Street. That's why the Kotel and the Nathan Strauss building. And the amazing thing is, the name is Nathan to give. Nun tef nun. When you give, you get. So Nathan Strauss teaches us that when we give tzedakah and we give our maisa, Hashem gives us, Hashem saves our lives. So we might think that we're giving, but really, through our giving, Hashem is saving our life. So we should be zeichel to give with a lot of joy. Mm-hmm. It's about Hashem. Okay, before you leave, Ali.